So what's going on, kids?
How you doing? How you guys doing?
Good.
Doing all right? It's a nice
Here we
Sunday.
Go.
It's a nice
It
Sunday.
Is a nice Sunday. We went on a bike ride.
Nice.
How far?
I mean, it was motorcycle stuff. So like we went to Schoolcraft and back, so like maybe a 10, 12 minute or 12 mile ride.
Yeah, nice.
Just kind of little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super windy, and it's one of those, too. You're sitting there, and you're riding your bike, and you feel yourself like you're on a 45 slant because wind.
Oh. Oof.
It's 80 degrees out here and sunny.
Nice. It is. It's sunny and 65 here, okay. So, like, that's solid weather.
61 here in the North Shore of Boston.
Those are all good for me. I'm fine. I'm good in
Steve
that.
Would still be all right in all these temperatures.
I'm okay in that. I'm wearing a hoodie, though.
Last night was 40.
Yep.
40. It hit 40 here, so it was a little chilly.
Yeah, we've had the furnace kick on in the mornings here, so.
I was with the boys at the beach and my daughter this morning. After renting Gina a car, we went up there, and we all said, now it feels like fall.
Nice. Yeah.
Now it's like it's really here. Because it still felt like summer up to last weekend.
Out here.
Sure.
Out here it feels like this is summer. It's stupid. It's dumb. I want some fall weather. So.
But what's fall in Rancho Santa Margarita?
December. Like? I mean, seriously. Because sometimes it can stay up to 80 up until December. And then end of December, maybe January, it gets a little fallish, but it's kind of.
When you say a little fallish, like what, 60?
72, some overcast. Oh, I know. That's why I live here. I love it, man, because I can, you know.
It's when we have to put on a t-shirt instead of a tank top, Tony.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I'll just go, I'll wear a hoodie. So, yeah, man. Well, boys, we're bringing it back. The Big Bottom Podcast.
Yes, Big Bottom.
Don't call it a comeback. We've been here for years.
We've been here for years, man. Well, it's, you know, it started during lockdown. It was crazy. And we've got 3 seasons, 30 episodes
right
already done, and this is going to be our 31st Big Bottom season 4.
Season 4, episode 1.
Episode 1, yeah. And this is kind of a, what is this, intro wrap-up to, or intro, because we haven't done one since the kind of ending of quarantine all over, right? Was that?
Yeah, basically, what was that, May of last year or so? Yeah.
Cinco de Mayo.
Was that it?
No. Yeah.
So that was kind of, everything was slowly kind of lifting, and we were still, and we had our buddy Andrew Dow.
Yep.
On, which is amazing. It was a great podcast, really, really fun. But this is kind of the, what, get people more up to, or get people up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about kind of what we've been up to.
Yep.
We've all had different things going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
That's true.
Yeah. Someone start.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just mention, like, we had a big thing, John. Please down there for me. John got married.
Yes, that's married. That's right. I did. Yeah,
it was
that's
awesome.
Right. That's right. Everyone was there last October.
Super fun, man.
And the
Vegas.
Yeah, and for those that didn't see the live stream, the wedding party was Tony Paleo was the best man, and then Steve and Keith Sticks, our buddy, the CEO of Tsunami Cables, as the rest of the wedding party.
Yeah, it was rad. That was awesome. And again,
honored. We had a good hang.
Yeah. Honored to be part of it, man. So I meant
we threw axes.
We did.
Or in the case of Steve grabbed a spear.
Steve was good with the spear. Yeah, it was his thing.
I was good with the spear. The axe is not so much. So I think my ancestors probably, you know, we killed some buffalo and some cows and deer.
That could be.
Spears. I felt good with it.
Mm-hmm.
It felt good. I felt like I could have taken down a I don't know, something not too big, but it was rad.
Right.
Yeah.
And then surprisingly, in like 3 weeks, it'll be our 1-year anniversary. So.
Wow.
I know, and we're finally getting around to having that reception up here that we said we were going to back in last November.
Nice.
We'll chat about that in the post op, the post room.
In the green room?
Yeah.
Yeah, the green room's a little dusty. We're going to have to clean that out a bit since
there's,
we haven't.
I think there's some food and some drinks left over, donuts.
Don't touch the milk. It's probably bad.
Just dump it.
The donuts might be as hard as a rock.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
So Tony, let's start with Tony. Kind of starting back up with quarantine and everything kind of.
I started gigging again myself, mm-hmm. More actively, doing more theater stuff and so forth, which is kind of, and then I'm now starting to do more with a couple other acts as well. So my Dig by Terry and my Electric Temple. So we're starting to do things and I've been busy that way. So that's kind of good.
Even towards the end, you were working. You were still,
Yeah, I was getting work again. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it comes in waves and, we're evolving what I like to call the post-COVID mm-hmm. how do musicians work and handle themselves now. Yeah.
Yep.
So
it's a little different. So for Blue Man, did they right away fill the theater or was it little by little percentage?
Oh, it was they moved to another location and now it's the old location again. And they moved it, out in Worcester, which is like an hour inland, and they did some work out there. It's evaluated and it's moved on and it's back to some degree,
Mm-hmm.
What I really like is that some of the rock shows feel like it's 2019 again, which is what I like.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more. I mean, the festivals are really starting and they're going through with them. Cause I know last year there were some that were scheduled, but then they canceled because of some insurance issues and stuff like that. So I think it looks like this year they're really going through with these bigger festivals. Cause we know a lot of people that have been actually playing these. So it's nice to see, from Metal Fest to, all those kind of shows.
It seems to be that like this summer when you were outside, people didn't care as much.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
That was like, oh, outside. Oh, it's 2019 again.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what it honestly felt like. I'll take that. Indoors, mm-hmm. Well, let's see what happens now, in fall of 22.
Right.
Yeah.
I had a show the other night that my own show, Dig, did their own show, right, this like little theater, and it wasn't as packed as we would liked it to have been. Mm-hmm. But it was still kind of cool. There was still a solid amount of people. The owner was happy. So I'm like,
cool.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Ticket sales and all that.
You at the last minute.
Okay.
At the last minute. Yeah, thank God.
Nice, man. How about you, John?
Yeah, I haven't done a whole lot of theater stuff because, I really sat down and kind of reassessed why I wanted to do it. And Tony and I talked about this during my NAMM thing for Tsunami, is that I took, I just really started being like, do I really need to do some of these shows that I've already done once or twice that I really don't want to do, but I just want the paycheck? And it's like, well, do I need that?
Yeah.
Especially now with Jen at the house and the kids and everything, it's like, It's got to be a lot more enticing than just, oh, there's some money so we can leave, So, I've been doing maybe about one, two shows a year in terms of theater stuff again. And I can't say I miss it too much. I miss the friends that I played with in the pits for sure. But that's really the big thing. But at the same point, that allows me to be more selective.
Yeah.
So I can sit there and be like, okay, who's playing that show? All right, great. Because there was one that I had an offer to do one like late September, October. And there wasn't really any reason why I wanted it. So just like, no, I can't do it.
It's kind of the older you get, it's kind of nice to use the power of no, but it's always, okay, what's the hang going to be like?
Right.
Cool. that
right? And
outweighs,
I mean,
you know,
it's also especially on stuff like that. It's always that weird thing that if you say no enough times, mm-hmm. you're just not going to get the calls anymore. You know, so it's one of those kind of balancing acts of okay, but I mean the music directors I want to work with, they know that I'm available.
Cool.
And I'm still the one they call first. So
yeah.
That works there. And that allows me more time to play with The Quirk, which is you know, the band that I'm in with my wife Jen and our friends Beck and Pat. And, you know, we started doing, like I jumped in about April, I think. And, you know, we've been doing at least one gig a month around Michigan, mm-hmm. like actually, you know, going outside of the city immediately kind of deal. And so we're playing the GTG Fest in 2 weeks
nice.
There. And then 2 weeks after that, we're doing a Planned Parenthood thing. So, I mean, we're getting some steady gigs regularly. So, I mean, and the best part of that is I've had to completely revisit how I'm playing because, I mean, you guys know me and for the people that have, you know, watched us on this, you know, I'm a very more kind of like classically trained soloist type of a player.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm playing in basically an alt rock grunge band. So it's a very different thing. And I've forced myself, you know, specifically too. I put some parameters to make me think about it. One was being like, I'm going to play the whole thing on this with a pick, which, you know, I know how to do. I'm a lot better at it now, you know. I mean, the biggest mind blown part of it, and you would get this, Steve, since you're a classical guy, is when I was working on the pick stuff and working on picking and, you know, upstroke and downstroke, suddenly I made the correlation that, oh, just up and downstrokes with a pick is like when you're working on proper bow technique on a classical bass. Yeah. And suddenly when I did that, it's like everything just went like this. And it's like, okay, cool. So I could start doing a lot better things. But I mean, it's, you know, as much as people poo-poo a lot of, you know, oh, you don't know how to play because, you know, it's all downstrokes. So, like, there's sometimes you need downstrokes, that whole thing. Like, there's a lot more power in that than just, you know, doing everything else. And there's spots in a couple of the songs we play that I'm just all downpicking because of that.
I have so much respect for pick players and good pick players because I can't do it. I've tried. I mean, maybe I haven't, like, you know, set aside a month or so to just do it. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard. And when I hear somebody doing it and doing it well, it's like, it's hard, man. Takes talent like anything, you know, takes
Cody Wright.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm definitely not on the school where, oh, you should play with finger, you know, that's bullshit.
Right.
It's like, come on, if it sounds great and it's for the part, I mean, that's hard. So
yeah, I mean, I've jumped down that rabbit hole now too, of finding out like, what's the best pick for me?
Yeah. Oh,
kind of thing, which I mean, thankfully that's a lot cheaper proposition than nearly anything else in the music industry.
Yeah. That's pretty.
What are you playing for pick, John?
Right now I'm using the teardrop shape, Graftex. Mm. I think it's the medium. It's like the dark or they're called the warm. It's a dark gray one and it's like a synthetic bone kind of thing. And I like it. I think the shape I want just a little bit bigger. Or something, but yeah, it's a tiny one. I'm not one of those bass players that likes a big pick. I've found that for me, having a little one, because then you can, you know, you hold it and you just have a little bit out, so I feel like I can get more precise.
Interesting. That's cool.
That
I mean, Blue Man prefers pick players.
Really?
Oh, yeah? Huh.
Yeah, yeah. I had to when I first started.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, they wanted it.
Interesting. Did they tell you why?
For the cut.
For the attack.
Okay.
That cut through.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You've got multiple layers of percussion.
Yeah.
So, I will say, I mean, I'm doing it with fingers and I have been for years. It changes. Blue Man changed the way how I play.
Yeah.
I can honestly say that. You know, I'm so used to having to cut that it's now ingrained in me. So.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
that's very cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, that's basically been what I've been doing. You know, we're finishing up a couple tracks in the studio. We're going about it in the thing of like probably release one in December, one in March.
Cool.
And if we can actually get enough things, maybe we can get a 45 out. Like, that's kind of the big goal. That would be sweet.
Like, would you want to do an independent, or you do it on yourself, or would you like do band camp, or?
I mean, we'd probably do maybe a band camp kind of thing. Like, we have, you know, the band camp account already. But yeah, we might do it through there. Cause I mean, that's always easy just to handle all the finance stuff of it, you know? I mean, the other one would be to do it through Reward Music, which is a newer one that's come out, which almost is trying to, it's trying to be to the indie musician what the iPhone was to regular people. Suddenly all these things that they were doing, they could just do in one cohesive unit. And that's what Reward Music is set up. It's got like, it's got the Bandcamp part where you can, you know, have your music, you can download it, you can stream it and stuff. You can sell subscriptions to your music. You can sell physical copies and merch on there. They've actually got a print on.
Really?
They have a print on demand function because they own a screen printing company. So you can upload the designs, they and set the price. It's almost like the old school cafe press deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Except it's screen printed, and you can, you can print the shirt or sell it, and they'll print it and drop ship it for you.
Well, do you guys have? Does the band have a site where the people can? Where the peoples can see?
Well, we do. I mean, we've got, I think it's the Quirk GR at Bandcamp or .bandcamp.com.
Q-U-R-Q?
Yeah. Q-U-I-R-K.
I-R-K. Q. Yeah. I can't spell right now.
Now, are you do anything with like DistroKid or anything like that?
We'll probably do some stuff with that. Like, I've got a bunch of stuff with DistroKid just through all my own, solo stuff, but that's really about it with there. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those. DistroKid seems almost like the only way that you could actually get any sort of distribution now as an independent artist.
You know, Diggs looking at Distro, and the guys are they like it so far. So
yeah,
yeah. We haven't signed anything, or you know, but that's what we're thinking about.
Yeah, I'll definitely put links to your guys. So, and then Tony, do you guys have a website? Or
Dig is really weird. No, believe it or not.
Okay,
right.
But Facebook,
yeah, everything page. Through everything is actually through bassist Tony Paleo, right?
There you go.
You know, and this is the thought process, because everybody, and even though a lot of people don't like this, everybody's in so many different projects, and
right?
Like. Oh, one more band page to match?
Yeah. I mean, I see. I get that.
You know? So we're shedding everything up until we do maybe a band camp or something like Distro. Like, let's do something that's going to turn something into money and do it for us and do it that way.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? One of the new artists that I like, which I want to get to, Octopus Diver, is doing everything through a band camp and DistroKid, and he's killing it.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, Steve, what's up with you? Talk to us, Mr. Araujo.
Hey, gigging wise, just kind of not concentrating too much on that. Just been, you know, still gig a couple of times a month. I have my church gig, but honestly, just kind of trying to learn the business side of the music business, you know. That's what I've really been concentrating on, and yeah, I talk to you guys about it all the time. So I still play. I think I really enjoy the business aspect of it. It's really intriguing to me, and I think that kind of just seeing where and what instruments are selling, and I, you know, obviously the R&D side of it too is fun, you know. So when and if I can contribute to stuff like that, I like to. So that's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of where I see myself kind of going. I still love to play. I played today, this morning. So, you know, I play with great players. But I, you know, I have to be, I'm like with John and even Tony, you know, it's like the older you get, I think, and I'm very thankful, I'm sure you guys are too, that you can be choosy, you know.
Yeah.
I play with a lot of young players that are, you know, hustling, and that, you have to hustle. You got to have that hustle at some time. I mean, with anything that you do, you know, and right now I'm in a spot where I can kind of say yes and no to things, where if it's a cool hang and my mental bandwidth isn't taken away from other things, then I'll say yes. But, you know, I'm pretty, kind of, very discerning about what I, what I take. But yeah, I've been able to gig even kind of 2021. There were some times I was playing some corporate gigs. I kept busy enough, you know, so I was very thankful, like you guys, you know. And, you know, out here on the West Coast, the church gigs were, and I've been a church musician, you know, forever. I know John, Tony, did you ever do?
I've never done one P&W.
Got it. Well, and I know John has. And
yep. And, yeah. I did one this morning too. So, yeah,
and that's been, I mean, I can't even think of when I wasn't a church musician. So during quarantine and all that stuff, a lot of the churches out here on the West Coast, what became popular, which I think probably throughout, was the band, you know, we would play, you'd have worship, an empty congregation, and it would all be streamed. Everything was streaming, right? And then we had a whole thing where we were outdoors.
Yep.
So little by little, as the mandates got lifted, as quarantine got lifted, they started letting us in the church with some, and now it's, you know, now it's wide open. So
right.
Thankfully, you know, that never really slowed down for me, which, but I know for some people it did. So I was very fortunate and I was able to, I don't know. I mean, I think it was, you know, I was really able to concentrate on the job and working, you know, so that, you know, things work out for a reason, even during weird times. And I remember one of the first podcasts we did, we're like, what in the fuck is going on? Like,
well, I think it was one of the first ones too. Tony and I are like, you know what?
Like
come June, this won't even be a thing. And we'll be like thinking it's all over. And you know, that was like, what was it? Right as the beginning of everything was starting to lock down. And we're just like, it'll be fine.
So it was really kind of crazy. And actually I think it's kind of cool how we have that kind of documented in the things, you know, and then talking to people from all over the world, you know, we talked to
Robert
in England and, you know, West Coast, East Coast, wherever. And it was really interesting to get all these different opinions throughout this hopefully once in a lifetime thing, you know,
the craziest thing.
So I think all of us are very, you know, we're, what's the word I'm looking for? Resourceful. So I think, you know, we kind of made do with the shit storm that was happening, which is,
you find other ways to make money, boy, when you have to.
Yeah. And we had a good support system, not just us three, but with a lot of our friends. Like there was.
Yeah. And I mean, that's so that I think that's more important than anything else is that, you know, and a lot of people always say that thing of like, you really, you know, when you're in times of trouble, you really find out who your friends really are. And a lot of times they mean that in a bad way, you know, but I mean, it really, in that terms of thing, you know, you really did, because, you know, there were so many people just, and especially maybe you had this too, Steve, like I had artists just reaching out saying, just wanted to drop a line and say, hey, hope you're doing okay. And that was it.
Yeah. Well, it was crazy. So we're in Fullerton. G&L is in Fullerton. So that's considered Orange County.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many musicians, well, actually it wasn't a ton, but it was like maybe 10 or 12 that lived in LA that came down and literally were like, this is another world. Because people were kind of out and about, you know, people were still taking precautions, but it was literally like 100% lockdown to like, okay, this is livable, you know,
I mean,
or manageable or without the ultra paranoia. But it was, you know, and they're like, man, I cannot believe how lax it is down here and how de-stressful, you know, cause it must've been stressful. And we have friends that were like, I talked to people that were in the Bay Area that during this was just, you know, kind of nightmarish.
Yeah.
And New York, like Sabatino, Charlie, I remember talking to him at the beginning and he, you know, anytime he had to go out, literally hazmat suit up, walk out, you know, it was like,
Right.
man. And it was the severity of the things. It was interesting to see regional, like how everything was different.
Yeah.
You know,
Boston really wasn't much different than New York, actually.
oh, really?
Yeah,
Okay.
Michigan was pretty close too, you know, and I think a lot of it, especially, I said it then and I'll say it now too, is no one wants to look back on something like this and say, I wish I did more.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would have been, it's easier for everyone to say, you know what, maybe we did overreact a little bit, but I can't say, you know, especially when we're talking about mass amounts of lives,
Yeah.
I think that's where everybody's like, you know, overreacting is okay.
Yeah. Better
You
safe than
know,
sorry, for sure. And
exactly.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard it put that way, John. So.
It was interesting and kind of cool to have that documented, and it was
Yeah.
the impetus for us just starting it. So that's kind of
Right.
like, you know what are we gonna do? Fuck it, let's do a podcast. Let's
I
talk to
mean,
our
everybody
audience.
else did. Why not us?
Well, and again, just to reiterate, this podcast was almost in text format.
That's true. I mean, it already was.
Well, we I mean our one day somebody's gonna have to publish our fucking Big Bottom podcast text thread, because it's like a sewing circle. We're like anything from nerding to gossip to, yeah, we're just like pinging each other, which,
It's
you know,
true.
which is great, because I, you know, and you guys know too, it's like, yeah, we're musicians and stuff, but we're kind of in this in the industry, so
Yep.
it is really nice to have this. And again, like people coming together, like David Rudd from Gator and Levees came down, and we were in contact, and it was just so great to like meet him. And we, you know, we had talked with him, you know, when it was kind of going down. And then my buddy Brad Zell from QSC, and I'm sure, you know, we can all rattle off so many people in this industry that are in these companies, that run these companies, that, you know, everybody's in the same freaking boat, man, you know. And
Right.
we're all there to like, hey, what do you guys do, you know, to try to help each other or be a support system, you know. And
Yeah.
yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. I don't know if I went on a tangent. I apologize.
No, we all kind of talked about it, and I can. Everything rings a chord when you don't have to do it for money anymore for a particular gig. It really does. Just to echo what you guys are saying, it really made me look at things differently. Do I want to do this anymore?
Yeah.
You know.
You know, and I mean, we, you know, for a while too, I was in two bands, and unfortunately, the other one just kind of, I think, folded or fizzled out this summer because there is just a little, I guess, artistic differences in terms of direction. I
I've never
mean,
heard. I wait,
I
that
know,
happens in
right?
a band?
It's
I
super surprising.
that never happens. It's like
So.
a yeah. Oh man.
But yeah, I mean, it was a bummer, but
Yeah.
especially nowadays, I'm just like, all right, well, we had a good time when we did. So I've
Yeah.
still got the quirk, so we can keep going, play some more solo shows at some point and
Yeah. Release more solo music, 'cause you've done
release more
that.
solo music. I mean,
Yeah.
I did do that last spring too. I
Oh,
released
yeah.
Life in a Pandemic, which
Yeah.
turned out really good.
Apropos for the times.
Very apropos. I mean, a lot of it was, you know, I mean, a lot of it was therapy of getting through the thing, you know,
Yeah.
too.
Doing
So,
something, right? Doing so
right.
completing something after this chaotic, you know.
Yeah. I mean, 'cause all the pieces were done, I think, in the span of 2 years at that point. 'Cause there was some stuff at the beginning, then it stopped. And then, and what I really tried to do on that too was my buddy Jason Achilles out of LA, very avant-garde, musician cut. And the crazy thing too is like his day gig is he works at NASA.
So he has a big brain.
He does. He's a
He's
super rad dude.
that's awesome. Wow.
We always have, you know, like super awesome random things. But when I recorded some stuff at his studio last time, you know, he and I were talking about effects, and he says, you know, have you ever thought about using effects? And he kind of changed again that thing of changing your mind about the whole thing. In terms of not just, it's not just an on-off thing. It's something that you can use to change the sound, change something here, something there. So I spent a lot more time with effects on this, on that latest album too. And that was kind of the big thing. And I mean, that's also laid the foundation for like going into that, you know, a band like The Quirk. There's no real reason to have a clean bass sound.
Yeah.
You know, in alternative and grunge, why would you? I mean, you could, but so it was me learning about gain staging, throwing a distortion pedal in front of a tube preamp so you can get the tube compression and saturation out of that pedal kind of thing. So
it's almost super calculated for music that sounds like it's not calculated, that you're like, fuck it.
Oh, exactly.
You know what I mean? Which is great. You know, like Sid Vicious or somebody didn't give two shits, plugged in. And then you listen to that sound like, okay, how did he get that? And that's a hard sound to get, you know,
it's like
he couldn't give two shits, probably had no idea what he was plugging into. And then you listen, obviously when they recorded it, whoever was engineering and stuff, but it's like, fuck, it's so raw, but it's so good, you know, and DK, Dead Kennedys or the Minutemen, you listen to that stuff. It's so raw, but to really capture it, you got to do a little due diligence on that, you know,
right.
It's great. That's cool. Nice.
What's like the new pedal like that you use? You said you put it like an overdrive. What were you using on?
Yeah, I mean, I've been using right now. The main ones for me is like, you know, I've been an Eventide artist for years. You know, I've beta tested their stuff. A number of the patches that I created on the H9 for some of their algorithms were rolled into the production one. Versions of stuff. So I have two H9s, you know, and I threw the AMT Electronics A-Base tube pre in the middle of it. So, and it was done intentionally that way so that the first H9 can handle any of the overdrive, distortion, compression, that kind of stuff. And then the second one can handle all the other things. I mean, unless I want to throw another distortion after it, because why not, you know?
Yeah.
So I use a couple of settings that I built off of, I think the thing was called Chisel, and it was like this grinding, just, yeah. I mean, it is brutal.
I like the name. Name's rad.
Yeah. So I've got more of a fuzzed out tone for it. And then I've got more of like a heavy overdrive, and the heavy overdrive I did intentionally because I've got a, another OD pedal I put on after the AMT kind of deal for just like, it's like the chorus thing, you know, if you're playing the OD and then it's like, okay, we're breaking into the chorus, hit that just for a little extra sound, pop it off when you're back into the verse kind of deal.
You guys don't even want to know where my mind went when Chauncey was using something called the Chisel.
Uh-oh.
we already know.
I mean, is it breaking this podcast into like PG-13 territory?
I'll just say no more. That's all I'm going to say.
Are you kidding me? This podcast green room. Is open green room. Source. Who gives a shit? I don't care. But no, that's rad. So I wanted to bring up something that Tony and I were talking about.
Oh, no.
So, and John, I don't know if you know this, but Tony, tell the people how it started with your, what did you exclaim you were going to, exclaimed?
Do I have to?
Yeah, because it's funny as hell.
You have to exclaim. Okay,
well, I haven't done it yet.
No, but you're thinking about it, and it only took, so it was a Tuesday. We were talking on a Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday. And Tony said, I'm all fours. I'm never buying a five string again.
Oh.
And I let me explain. Yeah. I have a lot of fives.
Yes.
Right. I have everything that's pretty good. You know, like my stables, my backups and my main bases and
backups and we all have it. See, the beauty is we all have that. We're the same.
I mean, Tony, Jocko only needed four strings. So
and that's what I was looking at. I'm like, okay. I said, just to clarify before Steve makes me look like I went pure four stringer. I mean, I'm a five string bass player, right? That's my thing. And I've had some great fours.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm only down to what's built right now is just a 2001 Fender Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Really just straight up, like that's sort of like my pseudo vintage thing. I'm like, oh, I said to Steve, probably just do a 70s something.
Yeah.
Not going to need anything five wise, I'm really good. I mean, I have a five string jazz being built on my main endorsement, Michael Lowe, right now. So I have an M5V coming that I'll use a lot in the cult thing and so forth. But I said I don't need anything. And then,
I don't need
Steve.
any. I'm not gonna need. I'm not gonna get any. I'm done. I'm done with five strings. I'm not buying another
So
five.
Steve goes, I don't believe you. And I said, okay, 6 months from now.
No. I because we were choosing. I
Oh,
said there's
no.
that's bullshit. That's called total bullshit. Like, come on, we're all the same. We're gonna want something like the next day. So I said, all right, 6 months from now,
Like now.
you have 6 months, and within those 6 months, if you buy a five string, then we do a flan or tacos, some stupid ass bet, whatever. It took
That's
two
a
days.
gentlemanly bet.
It took two
Gentleman's
days.
bet. A gentleman's bet.
2 days.
Two
We talked
days
in 2 days,
for Tony to lose that
and
bet.
no, and
Okay.
all of us, and all of a sudden, Tony has the high hard one for the Sire five string J bass, and
Well,
I'm like,
just.
I mean, the Sire really came out
dude.
swinging from the beginning.
Okay, so we can pivot to some new gear because I wholeheartedly
Oh.
agree. I think I told you guys, the Sires are fucking up. I want to get one of those PJ5s.
Yeah.
Disclaimer, I did not buy anything.
No,
Nor did I have anything given to me.
but you were thinking about it.
So Steve's just taking that as that's the beginning of the downward spiral.
It's yeah, and
Steve's
there's
already picking out where he's buying the flan, Tony.
yeah, that's it. Or tacos for me.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think
He's
it's
going to go to
the
Cerritos. He's going to go to Amore Tacos.
I
And
think that there's nothing wrong with it because all of us do it, but I just thought it was awesome that he
okay,
said,
I have some reasoning behind
yeah, of course you do. It's called justification, and it's totally fine. We
it.
all do
You're
it.
so bad. I come on
But
in to get abused. Oh my God.
it's not, I would do the same thing. I'm like, I'm never buying another, I don't need another bass, and then I want the freaking
In
stupid.
today's economy,
Yeah.
how expensive everything has gone.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna, and I look, I am a Mike Lowe. That's what I play. You know what I mean? I
Yep.
own other instruments, and I know.
And you play.
G&L.
Thank you. All right.
All right. G&L and Mike Lowe.
Yeah.
For an inexpensive jazz bass, which
Dude.
the reasoning being is I believe my guitar player and Dig, we are friends of the podcast, Mr. Filoni, might be getting a full-time studio space to set up his studio somewhere.
Nice.
I'm like,
Nice.
oh, I'll leave a five over there, maybe. You know, it's just so I can go and pick up and play and do whatever, right?
And it's not
To
one of the
leave,
backup, it's not one of the
right.
backup bases of the main, of the backup, of the
Well, it's
second.
when he'll need a backup for the leave-over,
Yeah, it's the
you
backup for the
know.
stayover base,
He'll
just
do
in case.
that, you know, and then he'll
And
need a
it's
four
my.
string version of the backup of the stayover
And
bass,
then
and
it's gonna
then.
be the badass Sire, which the Sire, I mean, I think I talk, they're really just like, they're really good. And what, they're like 500, 600 bucks for
So
the
for
great guitars?
$500, this is, I can't believe it. And I'm not here to like do a promotion for Sire.
No,
Sire is
no,
not paying any of us, right?
no,
Just so you
no.
know.
Yep.
You know, none of us are a Sire
But
artist, right? You know,
if they
we
want to
are.
sponsor the podcast, we can talk.
We
We
can
will
totally talk.
listen.
We can
Yeah.
do a giveaway, whatever they want to do.
I'll just mention it right now.
Yeah.
So Sire has the V5, which is roasted and alder. With some solid hardware on it, great neck profile. So for $500 for a four,
It's yeah.
yeah, I
I
mean
mean
that you can't beat that.
that five string PJ I think is around 700, 800, and it's I mean it blew me away. I was like, this is really good from top to bottom. I mean, I wouldn't
Yep.
change anything out. They're fantastic. They're really good instruments. And I think you should buy that jazz, Tony.
Well, it's passive, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think you should buy it.
Your face, Steve.
Because it only took 2 days for him to buckle,
Steve's
just
just sitting
buckle.
there waiting for his tacos at this point. He's like, you know what? The way this is going, I'm going to have those tacos for dinner.
But the beauty of it is any of us would fall into this trap and we would all fail because
Maybe do the same thing.
I do the same. I would do the same. I'm doing the same thing. Like I need another bass. Like I need another bass. But
Yeah, I mean, I don't need another bass, but I look at pedals all the time right now.
yeah, we're always doing it. Like I'm done with pedals and you're gonna buy it.
Actually,
So.
you know, in reality, doesn't John have more bases than you and I combined,
I think
Steve?
so, probably.
Not at this point. I sold enough that I'm down to 15.
There you go.
Okay,
I'm around there, 15.
I'm around there now.
Yeah.
We're not complete
horror. Yeah, no, a lot of its stuff, you know, was given to me, and I did, especially for work things, would be given to do stuff there. Then they're just like, you know what, keep it kind of stuff. And so I just had a ton, and none of them were getting played. And I mean, it really is one of those, you know, as much as yes, we are collectors to a point, I'm not a collector in that sense of just having all these things to have it, you know, to look at and say, that's nice. I mean, I'm very utilitarian on the things that I do have of like, okay, what purpose does this serve?
Well, at some point too, you can look at it and go, okay, I've got, you know, let's take $1,000. Like, do I want to just sit in there into something that I'm not really playing, or do I turn it into something that I want to play, or I don't know, mortgage, flooring, you know what I mean? Turn it into something else. So
I also think if you've got a main brand you're working with, it's good to have something else, maybe an import, something that's not going to, that's going to inspire you to play differently, inspire you to like write differently before any of that nature.
You bring up a really big point, Tony, that we should talk about in a future one about the fact that, different bases do force you to think differently and play differently.
Yeah.
So when I play a short scale, it's a good point, John. When I play a short scale, when I play like I don't have one. The Asynics, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
The cat base. I call it the cat base.
Oh yeah.
Asynics. Play differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely play differently.
Yeah, I mean, my main shorty is the GNL Fallout.
Fallout, yeah.
And I mean that's what I've been using for the Rock Band. I mean, because it fits that vibe.
Tony, what are you getting? and I'm on the other side, which I cannot get along with short scales.
Mm-hmm.
Don't dig them for some reason. I don't know. They just don't.
So I traded.
Oh.
Okay.
What'd you get, Tony? Look at his face. Look at the face of guilt. Look at look.
That's the face of somebody who's buying Steve tacos.
Oh, it's a sire. You got the sire.
This is
you got the four. Nice, buddy.
Oh, cool.
Dude, roasted neck, you know? I mean,
yeah.
They are really good. Are you going to put a John East in it?
No, I'm actually going to leave it passive.
Okay.
And that's kind of why I was thinking about that five-string version, because if I have a lull, it's going to be active. Look, I love Steve.
What you should try, Tony, is do this.
Uh-oh.
You've seen this. This is my JB5.
Oh.
That's got that.
Oh, yeah.
Do that with the sire.
The stacked?
The stacked. Stack volume tone.
Yeah, 62, like a 62 jazz, yeah.
I don't think I've ever played a bass. I'm almost like, you know, just so our viewers and listeners, we've tried between the three of us almost everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if it's been out there, and I have to say there's one thing I have not tried. Mm-hmm. I've never tried, at least I don't remember ever trying one, like a 60 stacked knob instrument, like a 62 or something like that.
I built one originally from, you know, when SX basses was the rage and talk bass for, hey, here's a cheap bass that you can hot rod.
Yeah.
I got a jazz bass one. It was antique white for, I think, $120.
Yeah. Oh my God.
At the point, I mean, the neck and the body were great. Yeah. I put Seymour Duncan Antiquities in it. A nice heavier bridge, and did a stacked volume tone thing on it, and the thing was a monster.
It's kind of interesting with the two tones. Like, I wonder how it would be with like just one of the tones off all the way. You know what I mean? Like maybe the bridge off all the way.
I've done the stacked on some SB2s, and it's very interesting. It's really cool. Yeah.
It's a very fine tuning kind of thing.
Yeah. The cool thing, Tony, if it's a jazz drop in, they sell harness, literally the plate.
Yeah. Like that whole thing. I bought it just like that because I mean, I could wire it up myself, but I want to say at the time when I bought that, it was, a pre-wired harness was $85.
Yeah,
with the all the parts itself was probably closer to 100.
That's nothing, you know. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, this, I don't like this bridge, even though it's got a heavier plate than a bent bridge. It sort of looks like a Fender.
Yeah.
That'll get a shallow. That'll have a shallow run.
Is it strings through the body also?
You can string it through the body, which interesting. I don't even.
Yeah. But no, that's dude. They are really, really good basses, and this is the the second or third generation now? Because I know
this is the second gen. This is the V5.
That's a new one. Yeah.
Okay.
The next.
They're good. So speaking of like new gear, obviously the Sire. Have you come across anything that's kind of cool in your world, Tony?
Yes.
Okay.
No, it's not exciting though.
Oh, what are you talking
about? I did it flight the other day. I went, you know, granted it was local to New York, but I am.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
Look how thick this is.
Yeah.
That's a dual. That's a dual.
Yeah.
Wow, that's not bad at all.
In the width, like, you know, that's a dual. Reunion Blues.
They're great.
Really it's nice. Not much bigger than a single. It really isn't.
Nice.
And it goes right up in the overhead. Whoop, whoop. Mm-hmm. No problem.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I love nice. That. Gear-wise, like John, mm-hmm. I started playing with I am a dark glass artist. But I kind of like this stuff more in a prog rock scene.
Sure.
From how I play, you know, that sound, it's almost a sophisticated overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
I always think about how do I get, you know, Brian, to quote Brian Beller, he said, Ampeg in a box, right?
Yeah.
I
mean,
how do I get my beautiful sounding rig to sound more vintagey? But see, this is the thing. I don't want to play a vintage amp. I don't want like,
right.
I just want that more kind of saturation. Mm-hmm. I still want the attack and definition of a GK, but more of that kind of deeper set. I started using the cheapest overdrive pedal on the market.
Oh, wow.
And it's not really, it's almost as an EQ. It's almost like if I step on it, I'm playing a different amp now.
Hmm.
So the distortion I'm using is really like that's the bass Soul Food by Electro Harmonix.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I don't have it where it's like, you know, like this
subtle,
super subtle, almost like taking off the highs. It caps actually kind of the ultra lows too are gone. So, it's almost like Ampeg, but it still has that tight, you know what I mean? If I want to do a quick run, it's there. It's just, it's deeper. I shouldn't say deeper. It's more saturated. It's a little softer sounding, so to speak.
It's not as cushiony and like soft. It actually has some
balance
to it. Yeah.
Right. So it's the best combination.
Okay.
And, you know, so some of the ballads the other night, the first time I ever used it live was the other night and it sounded, you know, only for a few songs, I'm like, oh, it's perfect. There's my pseudo Ampeg without it being an Ampeg. So,
anything new from GK coming?
They're always developing things, and I don't think this is out of school to say. They take a while.
Yeah.
You know,
which is fine. That's the way it's supposed to be. You know,
and, you know, they have all the new heads, the Legacy and the Fusion heads that they're doing in that new format that are really popular. I mean, it's been out for a few years, and now they have the Fusion out for a couple of years.
Okay.
They might have the Plex format out in a head, which right? So you'll have modeling. This is the interesting thing is with me with GK, and I am a GK guy. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily want to hear the modeling. I want to hear
an amp.
Right.
Yeah. I want to hear your amp.
Yeah.
That Legacy, my Legacy 800 is gold. I love that thing. I mean, it just, I don't need anything else. It just sounds fat, warm. DI is killer on it. I mean, it's the do-all amp, you know?
Really is good. We had these guys actually from Minnesota, so a little bit closer to John. Not quite Michigan or anything. These guys over forward. Great prog rock band open up for the other night. And, you know, become friendly with the bassist, and he came to me at the end of the night. He's like, I now I'm thinking about GK, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I reset up my rig.
Yeah.
In room for him. You know, it's after midnight, you know, and he's trying it out. He's like, I want to do this now.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Sweet.
How about John? Any new gear? Anything on the horizon that you've...
I mean, the biggest thing that I did was I got a newer speaker cabinet because, you know, I was using the Bergantino B amp for a little bit now. I mean, which came straight out of talking with, you know, Jim and Holly and Lee on here. So I use that, and I was using a Schroeder 2x6 for a while, and that's, you know, that's my little destroying rig.
It's ridiculous. But, so for, good.
Yeah, but for the Quark, I need something bigger. So I talked to Jorg again at Schroeder, and he built me a 1210 PL.
Wow.
So, and he asked what amp's going with it, what I'm doing it for, and so he put the speakers in there. So the thing will handle, I think, 1100 watts.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's...
Jorg overbuild stuff. I love it. It's overbuilt. Mm-hmm. Like, it can handle a lot. Yeah.
I'll drop it down the stairs. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's, you know, well, and only, just, this thing not only weighs, I think, like 50 pounds. Yeah. So, I mean, it's still light.
Not but... just overbuilt, like, physically, but overbuilt power-wise. Which is
There's nothing that's going to happen to this thing at all. So, but, yeah, now it's getting the... You know, I mean, before... The 2x6 is a 4 ohm. So, I mean, it's still getting that full, I think the Berg's 700 watts.
700 watts at four. Yeah.
Yeah. So it gets that full thing, but now 700 watts going through a 1210 with a tweeter. Yeah. It's a little different story.
Nice.
You can tell where my mind is going right now. Cause he does do, that's right. I completely forgot about George doing custom cabinets because essentially what he does.
Jorg will do anything. I mean, his,
And his cabs are now more traditional voice than that whole mid-forward thing that he used to do.
Right, the one that used to be.
I love the 1212s, though. His original 1212s were...
The front-facing and then the backwards one that was kind of diagonal. Was
it the 1212L, I think it was?
Well, it became the L, but the originals were just 1212s, man. Because the L's were when the neodymium thing, and I never liked those. And I had two of them, and I wish I... Those are cabinets I wish I still had.
That's kind of like the same thing. Like, I wish I would have kept my original Aguilar GS-112 cabinet.
Dude.
Because that original 12 cab was rad.
Yeah, those GS-112s were killer. But that 1212 of Jorg's, man, the original carpet-covered ones out of Hacienda, California, were spectacular. They were just killer, you know? But anyways, but yeah, you're new, and he's awesome and making great stuff. Yeah,
I wonder how we would do with a 322 style cabinet.
Oh, he'd do it.
He'd do it.
That cabinet.
12 and 210s.
Oh, dude, that's easy.
He might have something already. Like, he's got a bunch of bigger array things like that.
I know Howard Elgate has like probably 10 of his cabs that he uses, and he loves them too. Yeah, yeah, they're really.
I can't
good.
Believe. Back when I was younger, I don't know if Steve, are you doing this too? Those boxes were heavy, the Bergantino 322s.
Oh, yeah,
I would get two of them.
Yeah, I never did two, I only did one. Damn, son.
I mean, I did one for some shows, but it was in a big rock band, and I would do two of them with
that's, like we were talking to Jim, like that's one of the best cabinets ever, like one of. Like that.
Right, that we were all begging him for IRs of.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's right. That when he was cool. on, we all wanted an IR of the 322.
Yeah. Like, come on. But that's cool. How about pedals or how about strings? Anything new GHS wise?
I mean, we're at the point now we can start pushing stuff through a little bit more. I mean, the big one I'm working on right now is trying to expand the innovation line a little bit.
The upright.
The upright. Stuff and we're actually working on a set for the Ampeg baby bass.
That's right.
You know, because there is a decent market for that kind of stuff, and it would be cool to put those alongside the strings I designed for the NS uprights. Yeah. So we kind of we could have a little like dedicated electric upright division.
That's
for
cool.
those kind of things. For that, try to ramp up production more because I mean demand is there. Demand's solid.
Yeah.
And then
That's awesome.
In the GHS world, working on some small things here and there.
Okay.
Doing a couple of my big thing was just getting a lot of the online store up and running and getting that marketing and everything locked into that. Yeah. So
a lot of mailing lists, direct marketing, with
mailing lists, direct marketing, a lot of user experience stuff of being like, okay, how quickly can I get somebody from the main web page to them clicking add to cart?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. And just, yeah. And then anything else that the boss needs at the time.
Any minutia sitting around, you'll take yep. the flack. Nice.
Hand it over to me because he knows it gets done.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
You know, man, I still, like, I thought the Picrossos were going to be everything for me, and then when we couldn't get them,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, I'll try the Steels. And now I can't imagine moving away from the Steels.
Like I threw the progressives back. I found a set that I had set aside for my Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been for the longest time, I've been using the Steels on that.
Yeah.
Instead, I put the progressives back on it. And it was kind of the same thing, Tony. I was like, man, I'm not sure I like this as much as I did with the Steels on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are I love those strings. Those are on almost pretty much every bass that I have, almost every.
Yeah.
The Sire had the XLs and I used to play them and they must be the thicker ones. Mm. And they felt so stiff. I'm like, get these off. You know what I mean? I couldn't. I'm like, oh, yeah. Gross.
String and, yeah, that's cool. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what about gear wise for you? You've.
Well, I kind of cabinet wise, I mean, it's been a while, but definitely since we've done the podcast, I sold some bigger cabinets that I had because I needed something more modular that could go in the trunk of a car. So I got two of the Gens 112s with the array.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I got two of them.
And you like them.
It's beyond like, I mean, I love them. I still have yet to play both of them. Any gig that I've done,
those are the ones too that are not an exact cube. Like they've got a little bit of a slant on them, right? So if you stack them, enough tilt so it hits.
So I have one that's the exact square, and then one that has the tilt.
Okay,
so I can stack it on top, have one kind of hitting whatever, you know, the lower
mm-hmm.
area, and then I have one that can go to my head. But I usually just use the one with the tilt. I am so happy with that thing.
Sweet.
They're great. And there's no, you don't have to mess with the, you know, it doesn't have a tweeter. It just that with the Legacy for me, it's a no brainer. I plug in and go. I do a little tweaking depending on the bass that I have, whatever, a little gain, little, you know, contour, maybe cutting the highs, putting a little, it's so good. Like those are my favorite cabs. And I think they still make them. I don't know.
I think so.
112.
Yeah, no, I think they're still in production.
Yeah, and that's it. That's those are my cabs and the Legacy, and then I don't know. Bass wise, I me and pedals, we don't get along, but one of these days I'll get more. But
Steve lives vicariously through us.
I do. I love it. I love the geek talk, man. I'll be one day. One day.
So I'm like in the middle. I am pedal guy.
Yeah.
But I don't even compete as much as John. John's got those H9s dialed,
doing some R&D for them. That's pretty major.
I gotta get more used to, like, because, you know, before, like, all the Eventide stuff I have, because I've got them hooked up through MIDI, you can have up to, I think, 128 presets on the thing. And before, I'm like, why would I ever need that? Now I'm sitting there be like, well, especially with a MIDI controller, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know,
use it.
Exactly. Yeah. Make just a ton of different things, write it down. So then when I'm programming my MIDI pedal, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to use this for this and this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then as far as basses, you know, now that GNL has the bridge, the 19 mil bridge, it's just,
the Series 750.
The Series 750 is what we call it. And so we came out with the L2500, came out with the L1000. And then the next progression will be, you know, hopefully the JB next, and then maybe a Music Man-ish type of thing. So now that we have that bridge, it's kind of
the Kiloton 750.
Kiloton 750. So yeah, so there's a few things in the works. You know, guitar wise, there's always new stuff, but bass wise, I really think that the 19 mil thing, because I have one of the only three 750s, And that's I played that this morning. I mean, it's so good. Yeah, it's just one
So
of those,
the mass of those necks and maybe the bridge, but that extra mass of wood, to my ear, definitely affects the tone.
Yeah, it just sounds good. And on my JB, it's not that big. But yeah, you played that bass a few times, Tony. You really like it. It's good. I think, John, you played it
I
too.
did. I did.
And it's just one of those that everything came together and it sounds great. It plays great. And
You know what you should do next, Steve? Walk in tomorrow and say the next model for bass, the L 3000.
What's the L3000?
Well, it's exactly what it is. What's the difference between the 1000 and the 2000? Pickups. So the 3000, three MFDs.
We'll go Dingwall and
Well,
we'll offset them.
no, don't be silly. Do
No,
that,
no.
but do a but almost do a five-way Strat
Yeah.
selector on it.
There you go. Well, then,
So then you get and then have it set up so all three pickups can do oh my God when they're all on, and then you'll just like blow speakers everywhere.
just blowing everything. The other thing that I'm really trying to work on is the M series basses and that preamp are kind of the unsung heroes. And we
That's
try,
the
that's the Fuji
if you want a
fan.
cheap Ken Smith.
Yes, exactly. So if we can get that preamp in a setting where it's kind of a modular thing where we can use it in different models, I think that's going to be, we're talking about that.
I
But
was
just like
using the
any,
M2000
very
this
user
morning.
friendly. Yeah,
Yeah.
the M preamp is
Yeah,
very,
and
very
I have
friendly.
an M and I love it, and I know John plays one, and but it's just like anything, when you said that GK, it takes a while, and R&D and production, and you have to be ready for prime time with stuff. So you can't come out with anything too early. You have to make sure that it works and that, well, especially that you can reproduce it 100% every time.
Yeah,
You know what I mean?
absolutely.
Because that's you can have a great prototype, but does it come out again 50 down the road? So
Right.
it just takes a little while and takes a little development. That's why a lot of these, a lot of projects take a while. So,
Well, I think you brought up too is like they've got to also be able to figure out like you can make one easily, but if it's going to take you a week to
yeah.
do the whole thing, the other part of that is figuring out, okay, how do we get this thing scaled down to we can do this in a day?
Yeah. Well, and that goes to, we use CNC, so making sure the CNC program comes out the same every time, which usually is good. But then, so we're making like anything. Like let's just say that you have to make 25 of a thing in a day.
Yep.
So we're riding down the road making 25 of a thing, and this doesn't necessarily have to be guitars, basses, whatever.
Right.
Well, okay, you introduce a new model. Well, that has to fit into that 25 a day equation.
Right.
It can't cannibalize on that because those 25 that are coming out are probably from orders that were already coming in.
Right. You're still set, you still have a demand for those 25.
They'll have a demand. So figuring out where and when to actually put that new thing in that queue to, so as not to slow it down. So, that's kind of what drives me crazy sometimes. Like, yeah, I just come out with this. It's easy. It's like, no, it's not easy. You're not looking at the big picture. People
Right.
don't look at that. And we, for us, we do CNC, but everything is hand finished.
Right.
So if it's a new model, that means that another 20, 15 people have their hands on this thing that they're going to be making all the time. And we have to make sure that everybody knows, oh, it's this model. It has this. It has this. It has these dims. It has this. Oh, the electronics are different. Okay. So now we got to wire the electronics. Oh, the pickups are different. Okay. So it's a whole thing, So
Yep.
it's a lot easier for a smaller company to deal with that than it is a bigger company that has an assembly line.
I can
So,
speak on the small company part.
yeah.
I haven't talked too much about it, but I do have a signature preamp pedal coming out. With Sushi Box. We have been working on this, and we've made steps in progress for months.
Yeah. Takes a while.
Months. And
PC ports.
we just got the, so it might have been now 6, 7 months now, maybe eight. We just got the preamp portion worked out,
Nice.
the main portion worked out. Never mind adding the tube section, the DI, a cab sim. So there's other aspects that we're still trying to merge to make this work. So it takes a long time. It takes a long time.
Yeah, to replicate that 50 times, you know, you got to get the PC boards. You have to have everything right. So it takes a while. So when you're looking at bigger scale, you know, and even, I mean, you're going to make 50 of them, but all those 50 have to work and they have to be the same and they have to work.
We had several iterations of the preamp.
Yeah.
You know, and then we're like, okay, no, I mean, we just, like, I don't know how many, maybe 12.
Yeah.
We just got it now, you know.
That's great. Yeah.
Hey, Steve, back to the pedal thing. You know, you are a DI guy.
I'm what?
You are a DI guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you might want to consider just a small, teeny baby board.
Well, when you get those, I'd love to try it. Oh, there you go. Or I want to get the Rupert Neve one day.
So.
Show us.
This is my baby board. Can I show you my baby board?
Yeah, is this the prototype for?
No, the prototype. I do have a prototype over there, but it's not in the right box.
Okay.
It's in a different box.
Yeah, it's just in a generic shell.
It's in a, yeah, it won't look anything like that because the artwork is designed with that too. Yeah. But like, look how little this is. Woo.
Now, where's your DI? Oh, which one?
So that's the finality, right? That's not the Rupert Neve one.
Mm.
But this is like the tuner, compressor,
yeah,
filter, tube DI.
It's a tube. That's a tube DI, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From Sushi Box, the guy's doing my thing. So it sounds great. It sounds great.
Yeah.
In my main board, I have a slightly bigger board. That's what I'll travel with and so forth. That has the Rupert Neve DI on it.
Okay. But so. That finally, what do they call
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's basically the DI portion that we're going to add to my signature DI, my signature preamp pedal, which will finally, be my regular box.
Is that a 9-volt DI? Is it 9-volt?
That's
power?
Correct, 9-volt. Yeah.
Hmm.
Tone shaping?
It will.
No, yours. That one that you have in.
Oh, this one. This is not tone shaping, but gain and level, but you do have that tube saturation.
Okay.
Right.
Do you want it just a little bit of that minor saturation, or do you want a lot? We'll do.
What's like a
buzz a little bit if you want to go. If you want that, we'll do it.
What's the street price on those? What are they going for, like on Reverb or whatever? $100, 120, or a little bit more?
I think a little bit more, but okay. Under two, I think.
That's pretty cool for that.
You would think I should know this. I don't.
No worries. Mm. But shout out to Sushi Box. Yeah.
Sushi Box.
Yeah.
Check those out. Nice. Yeah. Other than that, no. I got nothing else.
This is teeny little. You could put like,
yeah,
your Rupert Neve on there or, you know, whatever you want, a tuner. And don't you have. Steve roasts at me.
I don't tune. What are you talking about? Comes off the assembly line and should be tuned forever. And that's it. I don't tune.
All right, Carol Kay.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, really? Yeah. So, well, right on, boys. Well, what else do we wrap up with? Or what?
This is good. It's good to be back. We would tell the listeners, hey, we're back.
Yeah.
We're here. We're geeking. We're going to have guests on.
Yes.
We're going to be doing some different things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We might have some playthrough stuff or, you know, and some reactionary videos as well. So
yeah, we're going to spice it up. We're going to spice it up.
We're going to do what we did there before, but even add a little bit more.
Ooh. Do tell.
Nice. That's what the green room's for, Steve.
I know. That's what, yeah.
You got to leave them wanting more.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah, the chisel.
The chisel. Dude, everybody wants the chisel.
Everybody go to chisel.com. Wait, don't. Ooh.
Don't do that. Who knows what that is? All right. I'm afraid to go there right now.
Yeah.
Chisel.
No, don't do it. Do it on a VPN if you do it. Just go to a private network. Don't do it. Anybody? In closing, I guess, we're stoked to be back.
Stoked to be back. Look for more.
Yeah. I'm Steve Araujo.
I'm John Moody.
Tony Paleo.
We're signing off. Big Bottom.
Season 4, episode 1.
Hell yeah. All Boom. Right. We're going to the green room.
Green room.
Adios.
Let's clean that thing up.
I know.